All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Na Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastana Bhakti Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nithi Nami Nami Sri 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 Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text 55, Dhritarashtra Puts Home. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vidyanatmani samyoja, Chaitragne pravilapyatam, Ramanyatmanam adhare, Gatambaram ivambare, Vidyanatmani samyoja, Chaitragne pravilapyatam, Ramanyatmanam adhare, Vikambaram ivambare, Vijnanatmani samyoja, Chaitragne pravilapyatam, Manyatmanam adhare, Vitambaram ivambare.
Yeah.
Vijnana,
purified identity,
Atmani,
in intelligence,
Samyoja,
perfectly fixing,
Chaitragne,
in the matter of the living being,
Pravilapya,
merging,
Tam,
him,
Brahmani,
in the supreme,
Atmanam,
pure living being,
Adhare,
in the reservoir,
Gata
Ambaram,
sky within the block,
Iva,
like,
Ambare,
in the supreme sky.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
Dhritarashtra will have to amalgamate his pure identity with intelligence and then merge into the Supreme Being with knowledge of his qualitative oneness as a living entity with the Supreme Brahman. Being freed from the block sky, he will have to rise to the spiritual sky. Report. The living being, by his desiring to lord it over the material world and declining to cooperate with the Supreme Lord, contacts the sum total of the material world, namely the Mahatattva. And from the Mahatattva, his false identity with the material world, intelligence, mind, and senses is developed. This covers his pure spiritual identity. By the yogic process, when his pure identity is realized in self-realization, one has to revert to the original position by amalgamating the five gross elements and the subtle elements, mind and intelligence, into the Mahatattva again. Thus getting free from the clutches of the Mahatattva, he has to merge in the existence of the Supersoul. In other words, he has to realize that qualitatively he is not different, non-different from the Supersoul, and thus he transcends to the material sky by his pure identical intelligence, and thus becomes engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This is the highest perfectional development of spiritual identity, which was attained by Dhritarashtra by the grace of the doer and the Lord. The Lord's mercy was bestowed upon him by his personal contact with the doer, and when he was actually practicing the instructions of the doer, the Lord helped him to attain the highest perfectional stage. A pure devotee of the Lord does not live on any planet of the material sky, nor does he feel any contact with material elements. His so-called material body does not exist, being surcharged with the spiritual current of the Lord's identical interest, and thus he is permanently free from all contamination of the sum total of the Mahatattva. He is always in the spiritual sky, which he attains by being transcendental to the sevenfold material coverings by the effect of his devotional service. The conditioned souls are within the coverings, whereas the liberated soul is far beyond the cover. Translation again. Dhritarashtra will have to amalgamate his pure identity with intelligence
and then merge into the Supreme Being with knowledge of his qualitative oneness as a living entity with the Supreme Brahman. Being freed from the block sky, he will have to rise to the spiritual sky. Om Jnana Pramandasya, Jnanjana Salape, Chatsu Mutanya, Tasma Shri Pradhanaha, Mancha Kopa Chubhishcha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavishcha, Paditano Pavane Vyo, Vaishnavi Vyanamo Namaha. So we're hearing more about Dhritarashtra's practice of this yogic system of meditation. And now we're getting to the results, where he is actually attaining success in this practice and becoming free of all material designations. So Dhritarashtra is now able to transcend the material elements of the body and realize his spiritual nature. And at that point, all of those material elements of the gross and the subtle body become amalgamated back into Mahatattva from which they came, and one's spiritual identity is realized. I think Srila Prabhupada explained in the purport about as simply, probably, as one could, this very technical matter. Now, I don't have a lot of personal experience with this process, so I hope there aren't too many technical questions, but it's I think we can understand the basics of it. In other words, everything came, the Mahatattva is the sum total of material energy. When we enter into the material world, the spirit soul, in contact with Mahatattva, takes on the gross and subtle elements. And on transcending those to the spiritual world, transcending to spiritual realization, all of those elements have to go back into the Mahatattva. At least that's as far as I understand what's happening. It is, but I think it needs to be louder, unless I get right up to it. I think it gets turned down with the kirtan and then it needs to go up again. Okay. Now, one term that's interesting here is the use of the word sky. Prabhupada talks about the block sky and the spiritual sky, and I was trying to think about that and see how this word sky is used, and it's used in different ways. In one sense, it's just considered like the same as ether. Sometimes, for the different material elements, the finest material element is ether, or sometimes Prabhupada calls it sky. In a sense, it's like space. Sky is like space, okay? It's not something that's very tangible, but it still is a material element, although extremely subtle. And on the highest planetary systems of, like Tapaloka, Janaloka, Brahmaloka, my understanding is their bodies are ethereal bodies primarily. They're not real gross like ours are. Ours are mostly earth and water, I think, and air, some. But at any rate, that's one use of the word sky. But he's also, when he talks about the block sky, there's actually layers of this in this material world, this material universe. There's actually layer upon layer. There are coverings of the whole material world. So we're considered like a block sky. Like, we can't get out of this. We can't penetrate these material coverings. This is really explained nicely in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. As the hero of the story of Gopal is traveling through all different places to trying to attain the supreme destination, he goes through all these different layers. You know, it's a nice explanation if you're interested in how this works, and finally gets out of the layers. Then one that goes into, I think, Brahmajyoti, isn't that? Well, it's the Varaga River, and then there's the Brahmajyoti. Then one is in the spiritual sky. Once one gets out of the layers and coverings of this material world, then one is in the spiritual sky. So Prabhupada tends to use these terms, meaning the material world and a spiritual world. Material energy and spiritual energy are the spiritual abode. So the spiritual sky is everything beyond material. I think the Brahmajyoti, all the Vaikuntha planets are in the spiritual sky, and of course, ultimately, Krishna Loka, the topmost area of the spiritual sky. So the block sky here is simply the material sky or the Mahatattva, as Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, the total material energy. So that's what has to be transcended to go out of the spiritual world. Now at first this verse may sound a little bit like the impersonal process of meditation to realize Brahman. It kind of has a feeling of that. And so we're wondering kind of like, why are we hearing about this, explain why is Dhritarashtra doing this? But what's really important is the intent of the practitioner. And the previous verses clarified the intent of Dhritarashtra was to realize the Supreme Lord. In verse 53, Prabhupada explains the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And this is, Ashtanga Yoga was a bona fide process of self-realization, particularly in former ages. And meditation, of course, was the process for such a yoga. Now, this isn't such a yoga, but still we're talking about advanced souls, you know, far beyond the Kali Yuga inhabitants. In verse 54, the word Hari Bhavanaya is used, and as far as I can tell from the transliteration, it means absorbed in Hari, the Supreme Lord. So in other words, Dhritarashtra is performing all of this meditation and yoga to become absorbed in Hari, to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, I don't know, it doesn't specifically state, I don't believe, in the Bhagavatam here, whether what he attained, whether he attained, you know, realization of Narayan and the Vaikuntha planets, or whether he went to Krishna Loka. I didn't see that it's really said there. But nevertheless, he obviously obtained a wonderful destination in the spiritual world. And in verse 55 here today, Prabhupada mentions that he's realizing his qualitative oneness with the Supreme. Now, that was an important modification or understanding that Prabhupada sort of inserted into the translation of that verse. In other words, he's not becoming one with the Supreme, like, I am God. It's not that idea. But I'm qualitatively, I have the same spiritual qualities as the Lord, which we all do. That's the whole idea of the Chintaveda Tattva. You know, we are one in the sense of having similar qualities with Krishna, but we are different in that we are very tiny and minute. So that understanding is there. I'm of the same spiritual nature, and we also, as Prabhupada explains, we also have to have our desires and our intentions aligned with the Supreme Lord. In other words, our idea of our service is we want what God wants, basically. That's what being a devotee is. So Dhritarashtra is more in that category than an impersonal Maya body, certainly not a Maya body, but, you know, a personal jnana practitioner or yogic practitioner. So all of these processes that are described many places, actually, in Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam, of mystic yoga or Ashtanga yoga, meditation processes, processes of doing great austerities, they are here in the Bhagavatam, and they are all bona fide processes of self-realization that were performed. But obviously they're beyond our abilities in Kali Yuga. I think that's one thing first thing we think of when we start reading these things, oh, that's not really for me, that's not really for us, because we simply don't have those abilities. We don't have the mental ability, we don't have the physical ability, we don't have the lifespan needed, we don't have the mental concentration needed, so many disqualifications. Thus, these practices were really for other ages, although they were very common. In 5.17.12, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, during the first yuga, Satya Yuga, people were very pious. Everyone practiced the mystic yoga system for spiritual understanding and realization of God. So now we're getting to the end of Dwapara Yuga here. So we can understand Dhritarashtra is an advanced soul, that he's able to do this. This is from a class Srila Prabhupada gave in 1972. He says, this mystic exercise, no need. In the Kali Yuga, it is not possible. The yoga practice in your Western countries, it is very popular, but that is a farce. Yoga practice is very difficult, especially in this age. Now, what to speak of us in this age? What about a great soul, an eternal associate of Krishna, such as Arjuna? When he heard about the system of yoga meditation and sitting on the deer skin and meditating and all of this and severe austerities, what did Arjuna say? He said, O Madhusudana, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable to me, for the mind is restless and unsteady. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong. O Krishna, to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. So obviously Arjuna is speaking for all of us. I mean, we know that Arjuna had great control, great mental control, but even still, he's playing the role of a Kshatriya. He's not a, you know, a Brahmin meditator, and he's also speaking for us because this is on the dawn of the age of Kali, and this is the instructions of Krishna that will come down through the ages and transmitted through the Siddha succession to us, especially the Prabhupada. So what does Krishna say? Krishna says, yes, it's difficult, but it's possible by practice and detachment. Now, what is this practice and detachment? Srila Prabhupada in the purport says, the best practice is the nine processes of the devotional service. That's the practice to control the mind. And this is I thought was a really nice purport. I'm going to read the whole purport of Srila Prabhupada's to that verse, which is 6:33. Prabhupada says, the difficulty of controlling the obstinate mind, as expressed by Arjuna, is accepted by the personality of Godhead. But at the same time, he suggests that by practice and detachment, it is possible. What is that practice? In the present age, no one can observe the strict rules, regulations, placing oneself in a sacred place, focusing the mind on the super soul, restraining the senses and mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, etc. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in the nine types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything and draws that draws the mind away from Krishna. Well, it's quite a long purport, but it says, I'll just get to the end here. He said, this attachment is called Pareshnubhavana, spiritual satisfaction. It's just like the feeling of satisfaction a hungry man has for every morsel of food he eats. The more he eats while hungry, the more he feels satisfaction and strength. Similarly, by discharge of devotional service, one feels transcendental satisfaction as the mind becomes detached from material objects. So, this yoga system that's being described here is not something that's just an obscure practice that's there in ancient history and has no relevance. Sometimes we think of yogic practice for attaining yoga cities, and Prabhupada describes this, that yogis would do this and they would gain, there's like eight types of, there's 10 and 8, there's like, about, I think there's about 18 different yoga cities. These are described in the 11th canto. But it was not just simply meant for aggrandizement, that I become a powerful yogi, and I have, no, it's actually a bona fide method of self-realization. Although not meant for Kali Yuga. And of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the process of Paramatma realization in the second canto, the Lord in the Heart chapter. So, it's a yogic process of realization, but it's to realize the super soul, to realize Krishna within the heart. In fact, it's even described in meditation, right? About, what is it, 6 inches, or the size of the thumb, Krishna. Lord Vishnu, Rupa's Paramatma, actually within the heart. Now, whether that's figurative or not, I'm not sure, but the fact is, Krishna is within our heart, whatever his size may be. Of course, he can be any size, because he's also within an atom, and between the atom. So he could certainly be 6 inches in the heart, or he could be a tiny atomic, whatever. He's the largest of the largest, the smallest of the smallest, right? That's Krishna. So that's so Krishna, of course, is the super soul. It's really non-different. Sometimes we distinguish, because we have different levels of realization, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, but it's all Krishna. So Krishna's super soul within the heart is non-different. But it's described, as Rina Purport, I think it's by Vishwanath, that there's a functional difference. They're equal. It's the same, Super soul is a complete, what they call the plenary expansion, which means fully empowered. It's the same power as Krishna, but a different function. So the super soul accompanies the living entity in its material world. But once we go to the spiritual world, our relationship is direct with Krishna. And then Krishna himself becomes more and more in our heart. But it's like, why pick hairs? Is it super soul? Is it Krishna? Sometimes we've had this discussion in this class. At any rate, I would be happy to experience either one very nicely. So, the point is that Srimad Bhagavatam describes everything in relationship to Krishna. And you'll see this Bhagavad Gita 2, even if other processes are described, Krishna always brings it back and says, this is the highest process. You know, at the end of the 11th chapter, at the end of the, you know, in other words, of all practices, the way to self-realization is devotional service. Only by devotional service can I be known as I am standing before you. So the devotee does not, especially in Kali Yuga, does not need to separately meditate or meditate on Super Soul necessarily, or meditate on Brahman and try to understand the spiritual energy around us, because it comes about simultaneously, not separately so much, but simultaneously with the practice of Bhakti Yoga. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a nice verse, 3.9.20, says, as the chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell, similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness can catch the Supreme Soul who is equally present everywhere. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, as a breeze carrying a pleasant fragrance from a garden of flowers, it once captures the organ of smell, so one's consciousness, saturated with devotion, can at once capture the transcendental existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when his Paramatma feature is present everywhere, even in the heart of the living being. The Super Soul, however, is equally present everywhere. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that a person saturated with devotional service and full Krishna consciousness can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead either as Super Soul or as the Supreme Person. So that's some of the results of the process of devotional service, specific mention, realization of Paramatma, the Super Soul. Examples given how the aroma captures the sense of smell, the Super Soul is reached through the process of bhakti. So, what is the root issue? Why do we always come back to the idea of bhakti yoga? And more or less, I'm not saying reject the other yoga systems, but saying, okay, these are maybe not so relevant, or maybe they're not appropriate for us. Why do we always focus on bhakti yoga? And I think it's the root issue is beyond the question of relative difficulty. It's not just, oh, meditation is difficult, therefore I'll do bhakti yoga. But somehow if I was more qualified, I'd rather meditate. No, that's not the position of devotee. Unlike every other process of yoga, the means and the goal are one in bhakti. In other words, in Ashtanga yoga or meditation, they're performed until one reaches a perfectional stage. They're a means to an end, right? In other words, you're not going to be sitting there doing all these things, and you know, once one has a self-realization, it's a means to get to that point, to transcend the senses and the mind. Now, very different in the case of Bhakti Yoga. Here's a verse from 11th Canto, 19.2. For the learned, self-realized philosophers, I am the only object of worship, the desired goal of life, the means of achieving that goal, and a settled conclusion of all knowledge. Indeed, because I am the cause of their happiness and their freedom from unhappiness, such learned souls have no effective purpose or dear object in life except me. Now, what's interesting in this verse, because it really describes, I guess, what we're discussing here about the means and the end. Because it says Krishna is Ishta, the object of worship. He's Svartha, the goal of life. Hetu, the means to achieve the goal. And Samatha, the conclusion of knowledge. Also, Svartha, I think there's a verse that Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, the Devadu Svartha Patambi Vishnu. They do not know the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu. So this Svartha or Svartha, Svartha Gatim is used in Bhagavatam. Think about the ultimate goal of life, the purpose of life. You know, what are we trying to achieve? So here it suggests that what we're trying to achieve is not different than the means. Krishna is the means, he is the end. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to this verse, says, the verse means, he actually says Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami says, I make my appearance as the supreme sadhana, the means, and the sadhya, the goal. So this is talked about in like Nectar Devotion, place like that. We have sadhana and sadhya. Sadhana is the means, the practice. That's our practice of devotional service that we do daily. Sadhya is the goal, or prayojana, what we're trying to achieve. And as he's saying, that these are basically the same. Now, I think we can easily see this if we look at what are the activities of an eternally liberated soul. Think of the personal associates of Krishna and Krishna Loka. They're actually performing many of the same, consciousness may be different, but they're performing the same activities as all of us, neophyte devotees, hearing, chanting, and remembering about Krishna. This is their eternal occupation. Madhi Shodhan, a little older than the gopis of Krishna. Madhi Shodhan and a little bit older gopis, what do? When they're churning their butter, they're getting together, whatever, you know, doing their household chores, they're talking about Krishna, they're thinking about Krishna's pastimes, remembering the cute things, the wonderful things that Krishna and Balaram did. Hearing and chanting about Krishna is what they're doing all day long. Radharani and the gopis, if they're not with Krishna, they're thinking about Krishna. They're talking about Krishna amongst themselves. Sometimes they're crying together in separation about Krishna. And they're singing songs of Krishna's glories. So what's going on? Hearing, chanting, remembering, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. These are the activities of the eternal devotees, the eternal associates, doing the same thing. Therefore, the means and the end are the same. And this is, I think, the glory of Bhakti Yoga. Not just that it's an easy process for us in Kali Yuga, which it is, but it also, we attain the highest perfection, the highest stage of realization, the highest end goal, the svartha, the highest goal there, achieved by these seemingly simple practices of hearing and chanting. Prabhupada calls this process simple but sublime. In other words, a very, very deep, very, very deep process, even though it may appear simple. What deepens the process is the purification and realization of our own consciousness. In other words, we begin hearing and chanting on a very simple level. Maybe somebody just kind of likes the tune, you know, or they like song, but somehow or another they're attracted. Anyway, anybody who starts chanting Hare Krishna is attracted to Krishna. There's an attraction there. You know, even somebody who's walking along on the beach behind the Radhyachakara, they're just enjoying the chanting. They're attracted. They're attracted to Krishna. This is Krishna's mercy that he comes out, to attract the conditioned souls and things like Radhyachakara. So that's there. But as one develops that and one deepens that, and their chanting becomes more developed or more real, then the realization comes more and more. I was reading in the Brihadbhagavatamrita a couple of months ago, Sanatana Goswami, in one of his purports, is a very important point to me personally. He talked about the idea of chanting with intent. Now that doesn't mean chanting like, you know, I really want to get that job, you know, or I really want to get that new car. I'm going to chant with that. No, he's talking about spiritual intent, you know. It's not necessarily just a vague. I want to advance in Krishna consciousness, because this was the story of Gopal. His chanting was focused on a specific spiritual goal, you know, like, you know, I want to be able to attain Krishna Loka or whatever it was, you know. And, you know, I want to be able to. He wanted to serve the deity. He was chanting with the intent of wanting to serve the deity, and then it just happens. It's almost kind of like miraculously somebody comes up and says, "Can you come and help serve the deity?" So in other words, we have spiritual intent in the chant, and then it becomes deeper and deeper, you know. And whether that intent is correct or pure enough or not, Krishna may or may not fulfill. But at any rate, that's the idea. That we try to have a spiritual focus of trying to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And then it comes about. It just comes about through that purifying process of hearing and chanting. Now, so what's the result? Once one is at that point where one is realizing Krishna, let's describe. And Prabhupada is describing this in the last paragraph of this purport. Prabhupada said, this so-called material body does not exist. Being surcharged with the spiritual current of the Lord's identical interest, and thus he's permanently free from all contaminations of the sum total of the Mahatattva. He's always in the spiritual sky, which he attains by being transcendental through the sevenfold material coverings by the effect of devotional service. So Prabhupada is saying that one who is self-realized, even in this world, even in this material world, on this planet, one can have this position of being completely free from all the material elements. This is also called, Prabhupada sometimes uses this term, Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means one who is within the material world, but not of the material world, totally transcendental, does not identify with the body or material elements. That devotee is liberated and acts on that platform in the material world or the spiritual world. One may experience the emergence of the spiritual body while one's in the material world. It doesn't happen necessarily all at once in a blinding flash of light, but gradually one becomes to more and more experience the development of the spiritual body as one's identification with the material body decreases more and more. Well, Dhritarashtra took a couple days, with us it might take a couple lifetimes, but still, it's happening. Okay. Now, I think this is interesting, and one, it's very interesting, of course, everything in the Bhagavad Gita is interesting, but it's interesting because this is very different from the way a lot of religions present their philosophy, isn't it? When you think about it, a lot of religions emphasize the afterlife. In other words, you follow a few rules, a few basic rules, you have some faith, I mean, you know, there's some good things, you're supposed to have some faith, you're supposed to serve God, serve your fellow man, do some, you know, be a good person, and then in the afterlife, the next life, you get rewarded. You go to heaven or whatever. Now, in Krishna consciousness, we don't exactly say that. We say, yes, if you serve Krishna your entire life, you go back to the spiritual world, go back to Krishna, Krishna Loka. Yes, that's there. But we also emphasize becoming spiritually advanced in this lifetime. Spiritual realization is possible within this body in this lifetime. And we are so fortunate that we have the example. Srila Prabhupada was sent by Krishna to not only to teach us this philosophy, but show us this philosophy. Show by being acharya, the example of one who was Jivan Mukta, one who was liberated even within this material body. And that means, doesn't mean that, you know, your body is somehow floating in air. No, all the material elements are there. But one is totally aligned with Krishna, totally aligned with the spiritual energy, with Krishna's will, with Krishna's desire. Then one is free, you know. So we saw that wonderful, wonderful example of Srila Prabhupada. We have the example of all of our acharyas, examples from the Srimad Bhagavatam of people who could become self-realized within this lifetime. So, actually, in the purport to 5.4.5, Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes the Jivan Mukta, and he quotes Vairagya Acharya from the Chanda Yoga, is it? It says C.H. Upanishad. Chanda Yoga, Upanishad, says, as he says, there's eight symptoms of a Jivan Mukta. This is how you tell someone who's liberated in this lifetime. They're apahata papa, free from sinful activity, vijara, not subject to the misery, vijara, not subject to the miseries of old age, vimriti, doesn't fall down again to repeat birth and death, vishoka, callous to material distress and happiness, vijigatsa, no longer desires material enjoyment, apipata, has no desire other than engage in devotional service, and satchakama, which indicates all desires are directed to the Supreme Truth, Krishna, and summarized by the final satchasankalpa. He does not desire anything for material benefit, he simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord. That's what we see in the Jivan Mukta, pure devotee of the Lord. So the activities of liberated devotee are the same in the material or the spiritual world. And so the movement between the material and spiritual bodies is almost immaterial to such a person. And sometimes it's described by some of our acharyas as, you know, for a pure devotee, when what we call death comes, it's almost like not experiencing it. It's just almost like just a movement of the soul from the material to the spiritual world, and sort of, you know, the taking on the full range of the spiritual body then. So that's what we have to look forward to if we could complete this process, if we could become perfect in Krishna consciousness. Okay, final thing. I was also thinking, reminiscent of Arjuna's question, Bhagavad Gita, of like, how in the world can we do this difficult process? The mind is so obstinate, strong, like the restless wind. This is very similar to in the final instructions, chapter 29 of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is called Bhakti Yoga or Final Instructions. Uddhava says something very similar. This is after hearing all about jnana and yoga and all these different practices that Krishna instructs him. And remember, we call these chapters in the 11th canto the Uddhava Gita, because Prabhupada describes that it's kind of a continuation and a deepening of Krishna's instructions to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Now he expands that, expands those instructions more fully in the Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto. It's very wonderful. I really enjoyed it when we went through the whole 11th canto here in class, because, you know, there's so much really interesting material in there. Anyway, at the beginning of the last chapter, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, I fear that the method of yoga described by you is very difficult for one who cannot control his mind." Sound familiar? Same question as Arjuna's at the very end of all these instructions. "Therefore, please explain to me in simple terms how someone can more easily execute it." So what do you think Krishna explains to him? Process of bhakti yoga. Right? Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga. Okay, maybe that's too difficult. This is what you should do. And he kind of summarizes some of Krishna's instructions. I really like this one. In 11:29:22, he says, "This process," talking about bhakti yoga, "is the supreme intelligent of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following it, one can in this very life make use of this temporary and unreal to achieve me, eternal reality." Now I'm going to read this is an interesting purport on this verse by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And as Vishnu often does, he says what Krishna would be saying or Krishna would be thinking. He does that a lot. You know, so here this is Krishna speaking in his purport. "The inhabitants of Bharatabhumi who are mortal and born in low families," that's us, "offer to me their bodies that are not worth a penny, which are deformed and afflicted with old age and disease." That's me. "But they attain me, the ocean of sweetness. Accepting their offerings, I, whom supposed to be the cleverest, out of joy give myself, and with my priceless ornaments, bracelets, and crown, to the devotees. Such inhabitants of Bharatabhumi are the most intelligent and most skillful. Giving one's body to the Lord means to engage the ear and the other organs in hearing, chanting, remembering, and service. If the tongue is engaged in chanting, if the ears are engaged in hearing, if the hands are engaged in service, then one is giving one's body to the Lord. But the Lord is attained even by offering only one part of the body. What intelligent could not do this?" And he concludes, "This verse is the touchstone among verses, the essence of all the Lord's teachings. He who has this verse shining in his heart shines in the assembly of devotees." I thought that was very beautiful. That is Vishnu's purport to 11:29:22. Beautiful purport. Okay. So, I think I've gone on long enough. In there, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments? Trivikram Prabhu.
Haribol Prabhu. Thank you for a nice class. I think earlier Vidura said that he regretted that he couldn't make his brother a pure devotee. So,
Arjuna said he couldn't make his brother appear to him?
Vidura regretted that he could.
Oh, Vidura. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Regretted that he couldn't make it. Yeah. So, one thinking, what has Dhritarashtra achieved? I mean, his ultimate achievement. I mean, how different is it from a pure devotee?
Well, 54. He said he achieved the supreme, or achieved her. Now, it's not quite clear. Actually, in today's verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's purport, I didn't understand it fully, but he basically said he was attaining Brahman and attaining the super soul, he said, which is not different than Bhagavan. So I'm not sure exactly what this means, what he attained. We know he attained the spiritual world. That's clear.
But maybe in 59, actually, it answers.
Oh, it goes ahead?
In 59, it answers.
Okay, I don't have it here.
Okay. Well, maybe he can put it up. But there Prabhupada says that, very interestingly, with Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, I'm paraphrasing what I understood, that Dhritarashtra, his father, Vyasdev, is a liberated eternal incarnation. Yeah. His guru, Vidura, is also Mahabhagavat.
Yeah.
He personally conversed with Krishna. Uh-huh. Krishna displayed universal form to him in his court. There is a whole pastime. So he had all this access, but he had an offensive nature to the Pandavas. As a result, he never became devotee. Without devotion, nobody can enter in spiritual world. You can go up to the border, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani. You can go up to the border, but not enter inside without devotion.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's saying these other verses that he was attaining the spiritual world. He was free from the...
It's beyond material.
So it could have been in the Brahmajyoti or...
Yeah, or up to the border. Just like if, for an example, 518 Adi Lila, it says that at Golok Vrindavan. All these years I thought, because I come from a material geographical area, when I say, you know, where is Canada, you can say it's the north of America. So that's in the world map, is a geographical location. When you say, where is spiritual world is not a physical location, it's another reality, another level of reality. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur Singh, Prabhupada even explained that when somebody comes to that pure level, in the house they see Golok Vrindavan manifest in the house. Mm-hmm. So how Golok Vrindavan manifest in Alachua, some devotee's house? Because he has come in contact with pure goodness. So, spiritual world, I understand from 5.18 in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that it is not another location, but it is another level of reality.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. Okay. Anything else? Other points?
I was also going to mention something about the Brahman. Because even though Krishna, yes, that verse says, Brahmanohi Pratishtha, in 14.27, when you say Brahman is also Krishna, but Brahman cannot exist by its own right. Because Krishna says, I am the base of the Brahman.
Right. Yeah.
But Brahman cannot say, I am the base of Krishna or anything.
No.
So Krishna has to be accepted. In other words, the personality has to be accepted in order to have a complete understanding.
Okay.
That's just my, otherwise people think that those are Brahmavadi, they are like getting ultimate. No, they are not.
Mm-hmm.
There is still danger because Krishna holds the
base. They can fall down again.
Yes.
Yeah. The Prophet said that many times. That there's the possibility if you just go to Brahman, you can fall down. Yeah. I was just looking at 59, well, it's jumping ahead a little bit, but it does seem to say that Prabhupada said he attained liberation only, but not...
Yes.
He didn't go to Krishna Loka.
Right.
Okay. But he was liberated. I mean, that was... He'll probably eventually he'll get an opportunity.
Yes.
Like you said, I mean, you know, Vidura is your brother and guru. You've seen... and not only that, you've been there and witnessed the whole Bhagavad Gita being spoken on the battlefield.
Yeah.
You know, you had to have some credits.
Well, I'm scared of that because it can happen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we have?
If I don't maintain my attitude properly to respect the devotees,
because Dhritarashtra's only fault, a huge fault, was that he was inimical to the devotees and the way he treated the Pandavas. Therefore, you didn't get the result. that most people under those conditions would easily, you know.
Yes.
Okay, anything others?
There's one online question.
Okay.
From Mahavishnu Priya Mataji. So applying Jivan Mukta to Srila Prabhupada, how was it that Srila Prabhupada got colds, had heart attacks, and took flu shots to prevent getting the flu?
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. It's not that one doesn't have a material body, if one's Jivan Mukta, like I said. It's not that one's sort of floating around in the ether or something like that. No, one has, but one is acting completely on the spiritual platform. What are these qualities? When you look at Vairagya Swami, Vairagyacharya, the symptoms of the Jivan Mukta that we could see were things like not falling down, repeated death, callous to material distress and happiness, no longer one to material enjoyment, all of his desires are directed to the Supreme, and finally he does not desire anything for material benefit, and he simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord. So this is the idea that Prabhupada describes about how when something is material, it becomes spiritualized. And that's our process. And, you know, Prabhupada gives examples. We've all heard them. The iron rod, that it's iron, you put it in the fire, and it becomes like fire. It's still an iron rod. It still has a quality of iron, but it's acting as fire. It has heat, it has light, it has the qualities of fire. So in the same way, the Jivan Mukta, the liberated pure devotee, still has a material body, but he has all the qualities of the spiritual body. He has all the qualities of a completely liberated soul, of one who is pure. And not within this material world, in the sense that their consciousness is not within this material world. Their consciousness is always with Krishna. Anyway, that's my best understanding of it.
Did you say that Dhritarashtra attained Brahman liberation?
He achieved what?
Did he attain Brahman liberation?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, it's not quite clear. Prabhupada just said he attained liberation. Usually, we think of that when someone's not a full devotee and they say he becomes liberated, like Brahman realization, you know, being in the Brahman. Because he's, you know, it's hard, as Frank Govinda's name, it's kind of hard to tell because one could be outside of the material world, be liberated, but not, you know, necessarily fully, like not in the spiritual planets necessarily, like that. Yeah. There's also there is a couple in-between points between the end of the material sky and the Brahman. I'm not sure. It's complicated. But yeah, that would be my understanding. I think the simplest understanding would be like Brahman realization, impersonal realization, liberation. Yeah. Although it does say that he focused his mind on Hari in one verse, as being absorbed in Hari, so.
It's interesting also, in part,
Prabhupada says that 1.9.39, Bhishmadev is expressing that how merciful Krishna, he delivered all those 640 million fighters in the war. But Prabhupada make a very nice distinction, which really attracted me in a sense. He says, yes, they got liberated, but those who did not appreciate Krishna, like Shishupal, they only merged.
Yes.
So we can get out of Maya, but what good is that if we have to come back or chance of coming back?
Yeah.
So then Prabhupada said, those who appreciated, and they enter into spiritual domain, and those who appreciated and glorified the Lord, they went into Golok. Very nice purpose.
So probably everyone on the side of the Pandavas all got...
Yeah, because they appreciated Krishna anyway.